4 new films up for review, we take an art pilgrimage to Dundrum, and ahead of The Rock's upcoming film The Smashing Machine, Jen Gannon on combat sports. You can contact us tonight, as always, on 51551, email arena at rte.ie, or we are on Instagram at rte_arena. As it's Thursday, tonight on Arena, it is film reviews, 4 films each with Irish connections. A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey is a romantic fantasy where 2 commitment-phobe professionals, Sarah, played by Margot Robbie, and David, played by Colin Farrell, embark on a magical road trip, revisiting their pasts, which become their guide to their presence and the possibility of love. The romantic comedy and Galway Film Fly winner Girls and Boys is the debut feature film of writer and director Dunica Gilmore and stars newcomers Leah Hannon and Adam Lunan Collery as Trinity College students whose chance encounter changes their lives forever. The Swallow is another debut, this time from acclaimed filmmaker Tyke O'Sullivan. It's a small house by the sea and a woman, played by Brenda Fricker, who begins a letter to an unknown correspondent. Exposed to the waves of a rising ocean, she reflects on loss and her reluctance to let go. And finally, we have Cillian Murphy, who stars and co-produces Steve, playing a stressed and troubled head teacher of a residential reform school for delinquent teenage boys. Tara Brady and John McGuire have been to the cinema first, and they join me now. Let's start with A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. John, first up, yeah. Margot Robbie, Colin Farrell, where are we in this film?
We are, after the presumptuousness of the title, A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, this is reunites 2 of the biggest stars in the firmament, I think Tara would agree, for this heartfelt but overly gooey romantic fantasy about coming to terms with the regrets of the past. One of the first lines of dialogue we hear is, "You have to be open," and that's worth bearing in mind as you hear the synopsis. Farrell's uptight Irish expat David hires a car from a mysterious rental company run for some reason by Phoebe Waller-Bridge and an underused Kevin Klein. The vehicle comes equipped with a magical GPS system that looks a bit like HAL 9000 from Kubrick's 2001. He's on his way to the wedding of a colleague where he catches the eye of Robbie's absolutely gorgeous but slightly cynical Sarah, who has arrived to the hotel in a similar car from the same company. They meet. They have an interaction. It doesn't quite go the way he would have expected. He shoots his shot. He is rebuffed. And the next morning, her car breaks down. She gets into the car with him, and the GPS guides them to a series of magical doors, points in the map where time and space behave differently. Walk through one door, and you're in your old secondary school, where Farrell does a very good song and dance number for the end of year musical. Walk through another door and you're in a cafe breaking up with a man who you treated very badly. Walk through another door and it's the house you grew up in, where your mother, who is long dead, is waiting for you with a hug. Or in Farrell's case, David's case, you walk through and you're actually turned into your father and it's your own 15-year-old and you sit down and play Street Fighter on the Nintendo. It's that kind of movie, Rick. You've got to suspend your disbelief. And as the line says, you have to be open.
It sounds like there's an enormous amount of disbelief suspension needed here. Tara, chemistry is kind of key in this as to whether this is going to make any sense or not. Is there chemistry?
No, I didn't really think so. I mean, I think part of the problem is, and that's not on them, they're very, very charming and they're obviously very good looking. We've got no issues there at all. But part of the problem here is that everything is so artificial. Everything is so staged and deliberately so. That's the whole point of it. Like everything is inverted commas. So it's a meet cute in inverted commas. It's a journey, but it's also a journey. So everything is like that. And because of that, then there's no... You're not really connecting with the characters in any meaningful way. And the other thing about the magic door, which is a massive issue, is it's a little bit of a cheat. You're just kind of, you know, not really getting to know the characters in any kind of organic, like, space or time. You're just jumping to these, like, significant moments that are, you know, sort of big life, death, marriage moments instead of earning it. So, and you even get things like where when the dialogue is a little bit bad, there's a point where they go up this sort of horrible looking CG lighthouse, which is another layer of artifice, is that a lot of it looks very kind of digitized and kind of fake. But we're up on the lighthouse, and you know he has this line about traveling to places as a lonely traveler and looking down, and you look down, you wait for an epiphany, and then later she quotes that back to him and says, "Oh, that sounds like a practice line." And there's a lot of that where they're kind of trying to have their cake and eat it a little bit. They're trying to excuse the bits of the movie that are actually quite quite bad.
Okay, let's see what it sounds like. This is Margot Robbie playing Sarah and Colin Farrell playing David going on a road trip in a 90s vintage Saturn with the mystical GPS which guides them through those doors. They go through one to some of the most potent scenes of the past, which involves a visit to David's high school.
Is that your high school?
Yeah, how'd you know?
Well, two reasons. One, those could only be high school doors.
And the second reason?
I'll tell you later.
No, no, wait, wait.
What?
No, I'm not sure.
What?
Well, I went here for 4 years. I don't know who or what, when, you know?
It's okay.
High school.
It's okay. We'll find out. Come on. Oh, wow.
You've got to be fucking kidding me. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Hi, David.
David, what are you doing?
Mr. Nelson.
You're late, come on.
No, 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 you're dead.
What?
You're dead, I was at your funeral. It's 4 years from now. I mean, look, maybe I was wrong, but get your pancreas checked, will you? Soon.
I don't know what kind of pre-show routine you're doing here, but there's no time. The curtain's in half an hour,
wait,
everyone.
Mr. Nelson, how old am I?
You're 15.
I'm 15.
Cool. How old am I?
I don't know, 40?
I'm going to kill you today. Get 4 years from now. Fucking 40.
That's not a bad line.
It's the best line in the movie, Rick. Yeah,
John, the film is kind of caught between genres here. There's bits of romance, bits of fantasy, bits of magical realism.
There's bits of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and bits of When Harry Met Sally and loads of Ghibli, actually, or Ghibli, as you would pronounce it. It's directed by the mononymous Koganada, whose last film was After Yang, again with Colin Farrell, and not that dissimilar about themes of love and memory and loss. But this is a big canvas. These are big stars. He's got a lot of money here and a bigger budget. And he's taken a big, bold swing. And the earnestness drips off the screen here. He really means this. This isn't some kind of ironic gag. This is his genuine feeling. And there's a sincerity to the story that's really actually kind of winning in the end. And occasionally very funny. But the story about letting go of past traumas in order to find connection and understanding in the present. A lot of the dialogue sounds like therapy talk. Mm. A lot of it feels like, and buried under that, all the magic realist cutesy pie stuff is that kind of message. Don't let the past get in the way of the future. But that doesn't need to be told in 2 hours. You need more to hang on to. And even though these are gorgeous people, and it's a pleasure to watch them on screen, and it's very nicely produced. The meat here is what you're missing. And you talked earlier about chemistry. There's more chemistry in your salt cellar on your kitchen counter. There's really very little chemistry here between them. And you miss that. So as you're watching it, it's actually the things that aren't there that you miss the most.
Okay, what do we think in terms of stars, Tara?
Kind of a low three. I mean, there's really pretty things and they do nice things with umbrellas. But yeah, I just found it a little bit too art and a little bit too twee.
They do nice things with umbrellas is probably not going to end up on the poster.
No, probably not.
No, neither. John? There is a nice central concept here. And that's the word nice. The one thing I must mention, actually, very briefly, is that the soundtrack here is shocking. Every action that you see on screen is mirrored with a lyric from a song, and that after 2 hours is just mind-boggling.
So I'm presuming you're giving it.
I'm giving it 3 stars as well because there is something really interesting here. There is something interesting and exploratory that has value. Maybe not worth the trip to the cinema, but certainly if you see it at home, I think there's some value here.
You may have been hypnotised by it in one form or another. That's a big, bold, beautiful journey. The winner of the Best Independent Irish Film Award at this year's Galway Film Fla is Girls and Boys. There's some really key reveal moments in this film, Tara, so I don't want to give too much away, but give us an idea of the general story of the film. There's a real lovely kind of before sunset thing about this.
So it's another meet cute, and it's set around Trinity College, and it's also set, which more films should be, it's set over Halloween night, and like Halloween night in Dublin is an absolutely fabulous thing to put on the screen. Fionnuala McCormack, who's the cinematographer here, makes really good use of it. So that that's a big plus for the movie. I think it sort of becomes a character in itself, Halloween Night, which is a good thing. But we have these two students who are very different. He's rugby player and, you know, very, very much part of the locker room, played by Adam Lunnan Collery, and then Leah Hannan, she's a little bit of a cool girl, and they meet in the library briefly, but they don't talk to one another, and then they meet again, and then it becomes very, very much along the lines of Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise, where it's two characters who meet and are talking and sort of drifting around, and as you say, there are quite a few reveals that come about in the course of that conversation, and don't want to spoil that too much, but it would certainly put you in mind of maybe something from sort of the big sort of Sundance players like Sean Baker before he became a big Oscar player, that sort of thing.
Yeah, let's take a clip from around about there in this. This is Charlie, played by Leah Hannan, sharing a student flat with Alice, played by Frances O'Mahony, and they're chatting about going to a party that night when Charlie mentions how she was studying in the college library earlier, but she had to leave.
Yeah.
Hi. Missed you.
You too, babe.
Your film arrived, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. Are you going to be able to do it for tonight?
Yeah, hopefully. He's working on it there in the library.
Oh, did you finish it?
No, I'm some guy, like...
Some guy what?
Nothing. He just sat beside me.
Oh. What a dick.
No, I know. I thought I knew him.
Did you? Was he hot?
These turned out really nice.
Oh, let me see.
Come here.
Oh, he looks so good.
I know, he's so sexy with that mask.
Your eyes and that are insane.
Yeah.
Stunning.
John, Leah Hannan and Adam Lunnan Collery are the leads here. It's the first time both of them have been in a film. What do you make of them?
Charlie and Jace, I think this is quite well acted, actually. There is a twist. We're not going to reveal what it is, if it even is a twist. And it's effectively played in the moment. But the director here, the writer and director, Donica Gilmore, he struggles to communicate how it unsettles his characters. It's not the actor's fault. And adjust the trajectories of the story. And for... They are convincingly awkward and uncomfortable, the two leads, and they're navigating the story's bumpy psychodrama with a maturity beyond what you'd expect for first-time actors. And it's very important to be encouraging to a promising filmmaker and his cast when they're making their debuts, working with a minuscule budget. But this is not an entirely successful film. It's predicated on a dubious coincidence, and the subsequent psychodrama is played out almost entirely on the surface. And it's a talking film instead of a showing film. And I'd like to have seen more rather than heard more about who these people are and how they are connected. And then on the positive side, it's an overnight movie, which I'm very fond of, a single night movie, and it captures Dublin incredibly well from street level. He's very key, and his cinematographer are very clued in. And it has a superb soundtrack, which is given out about the soundtrack of A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. But this is bang on. These are Irish bands, Echo Northstar, New Dad, Bon Rian. And every time a music cue hits, it adds another layer to what is a kind of a dreamy mood they're trying to capture. But it really comes across beautifully in the soundtrack, which is just absolutely aces.
What did you make of this as a whole, Tara?
I really liked it. I liked the rhythm of it. I actually liked the cha-cha-cha, the banter. I actually liked the kind of long takes and that it leaves space to breathe. I loved the two central performances. The only thing I wasn't entirely convinced about was I think the university rugby players are sort of imported in from high school jocks movies, and I didn't quite buy that. But everything else I thought was lovely. I thought it was very empathetic, and I thought it was a really sweet film and a really, really nice mood, and yeah, you have the music and you have the dreamscape and you have Dublin, so I liked it quite a bit.
Okay, stars for you?
Four.
John?
Four. I think it's better on atmospheres and tones than it is on story and character, so three for me.
Okay, next up, Brenda Frickert plays an artist living on the coast of Clare with her dog writing a letter to an unnamed correspondent in The Swallow. Tara, this is Tyga Sullivan's first feature film. What kind of documentary background is he coming from?
Well, Tyga, it's mostly kind of art documentaries. I think he's probably best known for To the Moon, which was this really beautiful collage which came from archives all over the world. Like he put out the message for people to send in anything they had from the moon, and you end up with stuff from like depictions of like neo-fascists in Italian cinema in the 30s to all kinds of dreamy things that came in from all over the world. And it's at vampires, you name it, every single aspect of Moonlight you can think of. And it was a really, really beautiful collage. This is slightly different. It's a narrative feature, though it's not like any narrative feature you've probably seen. It's quite like an essay in places, because it's very, very contemplative. And he's taken that sort of documentary, his background in documentaries and background in art, and sort of channeled it into this. And he's working with Brenda Fricker, who's playing this woman who's writing this letter, and it's this kind of lonely house on the coast in Clare, but really what it's about is it's trying to capture something that we do a lot in literature, is that idea of going back to, or sometimes in movies, say Gaspar Noé's Vortex, that idea of going back and packing up after a loved one has died and putting their things away. So it's about sorting through the effects and the things that we keep and the things that we don't keep and why we choose to keep them, and that's the mood of the piece, and that's the content of the piece. So it's a really, really lovely little thing. It's very, very fragile. It's a really nice thing. I'm very, very, very much predicated on Brenda Fricker, who we really don't see often enough on the screen, and who has just such an incredible presence in anything that she does.
John, what do we know about Brenda Fricker's unnamed artist in this, in a better circumstances?
Well, like you say, she's an artist. She's writing a letter to an unknown correspondent. We hear extracts of that in voiceover as she sorts through the detritus of her life, old photographs, scraps of paper, books, notebooks, half-finished paintings. There's a great line about a room of abandoned works and works never begun. And she writes about the history of lost art, the failings and gaps in memory, on how creativity is an aspiration to immortality, and how these things are all intertwined. And she confronts the passing of time and her reluctance to let go of the past. And we see occasional flashbacks to herself as a younger woman, played by the artist and filmmaker Sorka Kenny. But mostly we follow her around the house, the yard, the local dock, the beach, picking up sticks, raking leaves, walking the dog, Juno, who's Brenda Fricker's real dog, actual dog, whoever you... It's Brenda that's writing the letter, not the dog. And all of it is accompanied by this narration, this internal monologue. And that's about it. O'Sullivan, as he's shown in the other films that he's made, Ixmalu, To the Moon that Tara mentioned, and The Great Wall, he's got a great eye for landscape, seascape, big vistas. You really get a sense of the place. And he's got a sublime ear for sound design and sound mix. But even as an hour-long experimental drama, there just wasn't enough here for me. I, again, felt starved. I didn't feel that I was getting anything, any kind of nutrition from the film. It's only an hour long. Brenda Fricker is superb. And it does feel that there are moments here that there is one particularly astonishing moment. There's a funeral scene where she walks into a room. It's a fantasy. And the mourners are sitting around a coffin, turn to face her. They hold her gaze for a moment and then they turn back towards the body in the coffin. And it's like something from Rubens or Baglioni. It's like some really chiaroscuro moment in this film. And if only there was more of that, there was more to think about rather than just hear about. So I felt a little starved when I was watching it.
I'm going to take a clip from it now. This is Brenda Fricker playing the artist, writing the letter to the unknown correspondent. Exposed to the waves of a rising ocean, she's confronting the passing of time and her resistance to letting things go.
I wrote to you about my endless hours walking this ever-changing shore, watching the patterns and the play of light and the shapes of water, the colours around the clouds. I wrote how I would gather up a few of these, take them home with me. Small moments at a time, kept they wouldn't be lost.
Tara, what does the swallow have to say about the things that we value?
Well, I think it rather than trying to say something, I think it just has questions about the things we value and like asks, you know, why it is that we value them. And I think that's a really kind of fascinating idea, like this idea of like, you know, what ruins, why we keep and how those are not just like personal choices. They're sort of can be like framed in a kind of political way as well. And they have much larger importance than just what's in this little house on the Clare coast. It's also worth noting that and it's part of the way that the film is sort of emblematic of larger things. The late art director Tim Devine, he does this really fantastic job of taking this like little house and making you feel like it's like some kind of little universe, little enclosed universe, and like the clutter like contains multitudes, and like that, and that's really fascinating. And again, it's sort of emblematic of what's going on in the film. There's a lot packed into the 60 minutes.
We were having a conversation just as the clip was playing about the idea of that this could sit somewhere in a gallery as a kind of video installation.
Yeah, it is going to be, it's not going to compete with the car chases of the new Paul Thomas Anderson film. It's not even going to compete with, say, Steve or some of the other films in the cinema this week. It's a small film in terms of its length, but I mean, I think it's a really, really fascinating artifact, and I think that is the right word for it.
Okay, stars for you, John.
It's a 2-star rating for me, but I will say, Rick, that if there's anything that myself or Tara have said that would spark your interest in this film, I'd still urge you to go and see it. Your experience, and it is an experience, might be entirely different to mine, and that there's an openness there that's really interesting. But I didn't get it. I didn't like it.
And you, Tara?
Oh no, I'm going for. I'm a big Tiger Sullivan fan, so I'm staying in the O'Sullivan camp.
Okay, this week we finish off with Steve, the new film starring and co-produced by Cillian Murphy. It goes on cinema release tomorrow, and then you'll find it on Netflix from next Thursday. Where do we start here, Tara?
Do you remember Cartman in South Park, where he at some point goes undercover as a teacher and he's doing a satire of all those like mean teachers trying to create meaning in inner city schools and goes, how do I reach these kids? This is almost if I tell you the plot of this, you're going to think it's Cartman. Like it just sounds so. It's adapted from Max Porter's novella Shy, the author of Grief is a Thing with Feathers, which is coming out, of course, next month. And there are so many contrivances going on. So it's like set on this one busy day, and it's a school for troubled kids. It's a boarding school that's in this like National Trust house somewhere in England. And Cillian Murphy is the hardworking, determined to make a difference headmaster. And on top of him, there's a film crew who's shooting some kind of documentary insert for the news. There's a Tory MP. He happens to be visiting. There are trust representatives. Who have some terrible news, and so there are all these like visitors and crises that are piled into this one day. And so when you hear all that, you think, well, this isn't going to work. This is going to be one of those films, but it actually does work because of Cillian Murphy, who also produced, because he is so fraught all the way through. He's like running around looking for any bottle to slug out of at a certain point, when by the time he's gotten all the bad news he can possibly handle. But the second real star of the show is Jay Lecargo, who is playing Shy, who's this young boy who's managing all these volcanic emotions, and he is told at the very beginning of the film by his parents that, look, we're no more visits, we just can't handle you anymore. And so he's wrestling with this and he's acting out, and then he's in this environment with all these other guys who are also acting out and coming from now, if the film has any flaws, I wish we'd gotten to know them a little bit better. There's like a lovely bit at the end where Steve goes through talks through everything like that's great about them, and I wish we'd gotten that a little earlier in the film. But it's a really big bold swing. It has some absolutely bravado cinematography. Robrecht Havart, there's a shot where you go all around the school, and it's like this just incredible.
It's like a drone shot that goes in and out through windows and back out again.
Which absolutely fantastic. But there's also this like really interesting lighting and choices like that. There's a lighting design that's sort of feels slight, like you're almost concussed, and it sort of it gives you this impression, it stresses you out. It makes you internalize Steve's stress.
It is that first sequence when he arrives in the school initially at the beginning feels like you're in the middle of, and there's quite a lot of drum and bass music in this. It does make you feel like you're in the middle of a drum and bass gig about 3 hours in.
About 3 hours in, but with at least 3 hours to go. It's a hugely sensorial experience, and I think that is what elevates the material, that and the performances.
Okay, I'm going to take a clip from it. This is Steve, played by Cillian Murphy, approaching one of the students, Riley, played by Joshua J. Parker, about an incident at the school.
He spit in my mouth. That's sexual assault.
Okay, Riley, I'm going to say something now to you, and you're probably going to roll your eyes.
Oh, you're better than this, Riley.
that's pretty much it. But if you raise your fist at me or another member of staff ever again, then you're gone. You're out of here. Okay? I'm here for you. All right, I'm here for you. Okay.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, let's go. More focus, less fighting, yeah?
I want to ask in particular about Tracy Ullman's performance in this, because I haven't seen her for a long time. She's fantastic.
No, me neither. I can't think of the last time I saw Tracy Ullman. She was in a Woody Allen film about 30 years ago, and I can't remember all that much since. Which is probably an unfortunate reference, but and then her TV show. Like literally at the point where her TV show went off the air and launched The Simpsons, I really haven't had that much contact with her. And she's really really good. She's kind of fierce and maternal and what she can do with one line, and there's also then another person who can be really fierce and maternal, Emily Watson. So you end up with like some terrific performances in this film. It's a really great ensemble.
Okay, stars for you?
Four.
Four is good. That is our movies for this week. My thanks to Tara Brady and John Maguire. The movies we discussed tonight are all on release tomorrow. A reminder that earlier in the week we spoke to actor Cillian Murphy and writer Max Porter about Steve, and we also spoke to Girls and Boys actor Leah Hannon and the writer and director Dominic Gilmore. Both of those are available wherever you get your podcasts.